You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I am with, once again, Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
Hello, Lionel. You're
I
back.
I am, yeah. Unexpected absence yesterday. Hopefully you'll allow me to restart the Vuelta a España, having missed a stage.
Well, we will. What do you think this is? Challenge Mallorca?
Yeah. Just pick and choose the stages.
We're not in February now, Lionel. Rob Hatch filled your large shoes yesterday and did a great job. I explained that you'd been detained, not at Her Majesty's pleasure. But by saying that, of course, I planted the idea that you might have been, indeed, arrested and put in prison. But let's clear that up. You definitely weren't.
No. An appointment that I was scheduled to have overran, unfortunately. So missed the stage completely. And it sounded from the podcast like I missed an absolute cracker.
It was a belter. Yeah, it was.
But at least there was a podcast. There was the podcast to bring me right back up to speed. I feel like I watched it.
Excellent. Doing our job. That's great. Well, listen, you'll have heard Rob's excellent tale of the etapa last night. He did a very good job. So he had a hard act last night to follow, and you've got one tonight. What is your tale of the etapa?
I know, I'm quaking a bit here. Stage 4 to San Andrés de Techido. It was brought to life by a big break of 20 riders. The biggest names in that break were Darwin Atapuma of BMC, Andre Zaitz of Astana, Thomas de Gendt of Lotto Soudal, Pierre Hollande of Cannondale, and Denek Stibar of Etics Quickstep. Also in there, friend of the podcast, Larry Warbass, Chad Hager, who also featured in one of our episodes earlier this year, and Britain's Scott Thwaites. And that group of riders got well up the road, and it was fairly obvious that the chase behind, although the gap was being maintained, it wasn't particularly a case of being reeled in at a fast rate. There was always this last climb at the end, and Movistar, I suppose, misjudged it because they were trying to defend the lead for Ruben Fernandez. But the break stayed away. Just before that final climb, Axel Domont of AG2R attacked, but Domont was caught, and then it was another French rider, Lilian Calmejean of Direct Energy, who went clear, and he rode really well on that final climb, held his advantage over the rest, and took his first Grand Tour stage win in his first Grand Tour. Darwin Atapuma, he took the red jersey and now leads Valverde overall by 29 seconds. Chris Froome, Esteban Chavez and Nairo Quintana are stacked up behind Valverde. And last night's leader, Ruben Fernandez, is down to seventh. Perhaps a little bit of a surprise, given how well he was riding yesterday. The stage winner from yesterday, Alexandre Genies, holds both the points and King of the Mountains jerseys. Thomas de Gendt will wear the King of the Mountains jersey tomorrow. Atapuma leads the combined classification, but Calmejean will wear the white jersey. Tomorrow's stage is a little bit less taxing. It goes to Lugo, and it could be a sprint or maybe a breakaway. Who knows? We won't predict at this stage.
Well, yesterday we focused largely on the sort of GC battle on that climb and sort of overlooked the stage win a little bit for Genies, but I think today, the story of the day was Calmejean, who rode excellently. A real opportunist attack, got away on quite a tough climb, insisted afterwards that he's not a climber, he's more of an all-rounder, strong rider though, and he's had a good first season, very consistent. He's ridden a lot actually, he's raced about 60 days already this year, which is quite a lot for a neo-pro, but he has ridden consistently well all year really from the start of the season, and he rode very, very well indeed, very strongly to stay away. Pierre Rolland tried to bridge across to him, and you know it's a measure of how well Calmejean was riding, I think, that Rolland never made it, because ordinarily you would expect Rolland, who in different circumstances might have been a teammate, mightn't he? Because he was in the Team Europe car that became Direct Energy, so they're careers didn't overlap there, Calmejean and Rolland. But yeah, you would expect Rolland, the senior rider, the guy with the real pedigree, to get across to Calmejean and probably win the stage, but he didn't, which tells you, I think, how well Calmejean was riding.
Well, it does when you consider the strength of the riders that were in that group. Thomas de Gendt, of course, very good. You would have thought he would be strong on that final climb. But I suppose the reason that it was all a bit cagey behind was that Darwin Atapuma just had his eyes so firmly fixed on the red jersey by the final stages of that last climb, he knew that it was pretty much in the bag, and it's going to take a real acceleration from Movistar to close down the gap enough to deny him. And I think Atapuma ordinarily would have been chasing a stage win rather than going for the red jersey, but because the red jersey was there in front of him dangling like a red carrot, not sure that works, but because it was there as the prize for him at the end of the day, you know, he wasn't quite as fixated on the stage win. And when you think back to the Giro, he's had three really near misses there, didn't he? He was third, I think, in one of the stages at the end of the first week in the mountains. He was fourth at Corvara in the Dolomites. I hope it's the Dolomites. Pretty sure it's the Dolomites. Looked like the Dolomites. And he was second.
Any uphill road in Italy is a Dolomite, is it not?
It is when Daniel's not here, that's right. And he was second on the penultimate stage. And, you know, he was one of the nearly men of the Giro, really. Rode very well, ninth overall there. And kind of, you know, good things come to those who wait. He was patient today, he didn't panic, and he rode well. But yeah, man of the day, definitely Calmejan. Not sure if you noticed, Rich, but our friend and colleague Andy McGrath had a fun fact about Lilian Calmejan. Apparently, when he was doing a business studies course, he came over to Nottingham in England for a summer. I think it was 2012, not sure which year it was, but a few years ago now. And while he was here, he was riding Nottingham Clarion time trials, their evening 10s. I think he was sixth in one of them. So any Nottingham Clarion members out there want to verify that, but we believe that to be the case. So there we
well,
are.
Well, that stint studying in the UK perhaps explains his excellent English, without a trace of a Nottingham accent there as well, but he speaks very good English. They're all very well educated, these young Frenchmen, aren't they? They're all studying, and they're all university educated, pretty much. I can think of at least two in my head. Darwin Atapuma, he's leading the race now. So the race lead has changed every single stage so far, which is quite unusual. I was surprised that Ruben Fernandez slipped out of the lead, that he got dropped towards the top of a climb that wasn't as tough as the previous day. It perhaps tells you how much he left on the road the previous day, because he did an exceptional ride that on Monday, thinking he'd won the stage, of course, threw his arms in the air. But he did he looked very, very strong there, and you fancied watching him that he might be somebody who would hold on to the lead for a few days at least. But it was a surprise to see him get dropped. Otherwise, had he not been dropped, it might have been much closer for Atapuma to take the jersey. I mean, he's got it by 29 seconds over Valverde, so he had a little bit of a cushion there. But Atapuma, a couple of weeks ago, was, of course, running the Tour of Utah, which I was at, and he rode well. I think he was fourth overall, but he was very strong on all the climbs. And, I wonder if Lachlan Morton is watching the Vuelta and thinking about his own career, because he obviously beat him there and rode exceptionally well. And is somebody with the talent to perhaps be racing at this level. Another rider who shone in the Tour of Utah, I'll just mention, Adrian Costa, the young American, won the time trial in the Tour de l'Avenir today as well. So that was quite a good result for him.
He's only 18, isn't he? I mean, you know, a lot of the riders he'll be up against will be 21, 22, won't they?
It's just quite interesting to see how these guys are getting on after a couple of weeks. Shall we hear from Daniel Freib with his Daily Dispatch? Over to you, Daniel.
Good evening, chaps, Rich, Lionel. Where are we, Lionel? Where are you, Lionel? I understand you're back on the podcast anyway, rising like a phoenix. No longer the Lion of the Chilterns, now rebranded as the Phoenix of the Chilterns and indeed the podcast. I, of course, am still in Galicia on the northwest coast of Spain. And we were on the very northwest tip of the region today in a place called San Andres de Teixido. Fascinating little place, set atop the highest cliffs in Europe, I found out today, 610 meters above the Atlantic. And looking out over the spot where I also found out today, very famous British film star Leslie Howard of Gone with the Wind fame was gunned down by the Luftwaffe in 1943, midway through, or towards the end of the Second World War, in fact. And why was he shot down? All sorts of fairly fanciful theories about why that was. One is that he was he was moonlighting as a spy for the British Army or the British government. He might have purely been seen as a, or simply been seen by the Germans as a bit of a poster boy for the Allied forces, and consequently they thought that they could deal a bit of a blow to British morale by killing him. Or, and this is my favourite theory of all, his manager, the gentleman that Leslie Howard was travelling with on this particular day, looked very much like Winston Churchill, and the Germans thought that they were killing Winston Churchill when they shot down his plane. Anyway, I spent much of the day finding out about that and Leslie Howard. As far as the race is concerned, wasn't too surprised to see Lilian Calmejean win his first Grand Tour stage in his first pro season, because I've been droning on about how good he is pretty much since the start of the year. Looks very much like the next sort of big thing in this latest wave of young French talent. Remains to be seen what kind of rider he's going to be. He was asked about that after the finish today, or we asked him about that, and he said that it's the Grand Tours really and general classification that he's most excited about, but he acknowledges that he perhaps doesn't have the body type to be a Grand Tour specialist in the future. Anyway, I'm sure he's going to be very prominent over the next few seasons in on whatever kind of terrain he decides suits him best. Not much happened on the GC. We're still in Galicia tomorrow. I'm off to have some octopus. Slightly sheepish, slightly nervous about that because I don't usually enjoy my seafood. Anyway, I've been assured that I have to have some octopus in Galicia, so I'm off to try some of that now, and I'll check in again, I'm sure, tomorrow. Thanks guys, see you, bye.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Of course you can watch the Vuelta every day on Eurosport, and thank you also to Rafa, our other sponsor, who are sponsoring us throughout the Vuelta, as they have been since the start of the Tour de France. Thank you very much to them. Another little thing on Atapuma, actually, we released on Monday a special little bonus episode. It was a chat with Joe Dombrowski at the Rafa Cycle Club in East London in late June. He talks a bit in that episode about Darwin Atapuma, who he was away with in the Giro, a couple of times. Not his biggest fan, not a fan of Atapuma. You can hear why when you listen to that conversation with Joe Dombrowski, which you'll find in all the usual
controversial.
It wasn't that controversial, to be fair. It was fairly gentle, but you know, he has his reasons for not being a fan of not a fan of him as a person, but as somebody to be in a break with. Sounds like sounds quite challenging. We're unlikely to find ourselves in that scenario, Lionel, so we'll be judging him against different criteria.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think my days of being in a break with Darwin Atapuma well and truly over.
Yeah, but they were good while they lasted.
Yeah, when were they? When were these days?
Sorry, I'm getting confused. Anything else catch your eye today, Lionel? Something that caught my eye was Peter Kennock having a little dig on the climb, and I wondered whether that was to try and get himself back into the red jersey. I can't think why Team Sky would really want Peter Kennock back in the red jersey, but it was an odd little attack, and he paid for it in the end because he lost a little bit of time, slipped down a couple of places from 7th to 9th overall.
Indeed. What catches my eye really, I suppose, is looking at the GC and seeing just how much damage yesterday's stage has done, really. I mean, there's big time gaps. I know Alberto Contador's had a little wobble already, but you look at the list of overall contenders and a lot of the riders that you would expect to be there are still there. Valverde, Froome, Chavez, Quintana. But then after that, it's really slimmed down the list of contenders, hasn't it? When the other thing that leaps out from the top 10 is three Colombians are in there. Atapuma, of course, first, Chavez and Quintana. And they're all, you know, young or youngish riders. And when you look at this is the Vuelta, you look at the Spanish challenge, I think Ruben Fernandez is 25 years old, I think, 26 maybe. No, 25 years old. Everybody else is an old-timer, really. Samuel Sanchez, Contador, Daniel Moreno. There's a real kind of, we've talked about this before, but there is a bit of a generation gap in Spanish cycling. So strong and such strength in depth, really, for so long. And there's not an awful lot for Spanish fans to get all that excited about. They'll be pinning their hopes, I'm sure, on Alberto Contador coming good. Or maybe Valverde clinging on.
Yeah, I mean, Mikel Landa is a guy who, you know, should be going well in the next few years. He's not riding, obviously, a late withdrawal, but he's one of the younger Spanish riders of whom much is expected. Somebody we didn't mention yesterday, actually, was TJ Van Garderen, who lost a lot of time on Monday and then more on Tuesday. He's down in 91st overall, 18 minutes. He's teammate of Darwin Atapuma, of course, and he's certainly not going to be challenging at this Vuelta, but not sure really what we expected of Van Garderen, but after his slightly disappointing Tour de France, I guess this was a chance to again show that he has what it takes to lead a team on GC. He's not going to do it here. Amazingly, ahead of him on GC is Miguel Angel Lopez, who actually moved up a lot of places overnight. He crashed, had a terrible crash on Monday, landed on his face, broke three teeth. Sean Kelly had a wonderful line about that today, saying, "You don't want to not have any teeth," or something. "You don't want to... You don't want to knock your teeth out." It was something very understated, but you know, he's right. There's no arguing with that at all. But you can imagine Sean Kelly, had he knocked teeth out in his career, and you'll know whether he did or not, Lionel, he probably wouldn't have held him back too much. And similarly with Lopez, I mean, very impressive that he even started today and that he rode pretty well today. He's up to 73rd overall. He's not going to trouble the top 10, but he's another Colombian who might have made it four in the top 10 without the problems that he's had. So a shame for him, but he's still in the race, and he may fancy that he'll recover and do something in the final week.
Yeah, I mean, a real terrible one, that and the fact that he's just carrying on really says a lot about the strength of character required for some of these guys, and that's, we always make the point when riders have big crashes and they have open wounds and the difficulty of being able to sleep and all of that. I mean, I just can't imagine how you could carry on in a Grand Tour with having knocked teeth out. I mean, just quite apart from anything else, how's he going to eat anything? It's going to be a tough 3 weeks if he's only on ice cream and soup, isn't it? I mean, I'm not being flippant, but it's one of those ones where every day he gets through is just a real testament to him and a bonus, I guess. But just on Van Garderen, yeah, it's a funny one. Always hyped up, perhaps because he's American and perhaps because there's a relative dearth of American GC riders at the moment. But really, an awful lot of weight of expectation created by those two top five finishes in the Tour de France, and when you look at the rest of his Grand Tour record, it's really very patchy, isn't it? A couple of withdrawals last year, both in the Tour and the Vuelta, a very disappointing Tour this year, and already a disappointing start, and just doesn't he's a Grand Tour rider who can't ride Grand Tours. And when you look at the other races he does, he does get results in the stage races, but you would expect a rider of his calibre or supposed calibre to be really getting on the podium at the Tour of Catalonia or Tour de Suisse or any of these races where he's had high overall finishes but not really stepped into the top echelon.
I think I think he and Taylor Finney sort of came along at about the same time, just after the controversial Lance Armstrong, and I think that put them in the position of being the sort of the next great hopes of American cycling, and there wasn't a lot else at the time, and I think there is now. I mentioned Adrian Costa earlier, but there's lots of young Americans who are starting to show real potentials. There's just a lot of them, and of them all, I'm sure one of them will emerge as a champion. Just a point, because we'll wrap this up very soon, but a point somebody made on Twitter, Daniel mentioned something last night that we've talked about quite a lot over the last couple of years about the Vuelta and the crowds. The crowds are very impressive, even in quite a sparsely populated part of the country, which it's in at the moment. Crowds are very impressive, and Daniel speculated, as we've all speculated over the last couple of years, that one of the reasons for that could be the very high unemployment rate in Spain. Jorge tweeted, and this is a very good point, "Not entirely convinced that the amount of spectators is related to unemployment. Lots of jobs in Spain go from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. And of course, there's the extended siesta in Spain as well. So, you know, it's possible that the last couple of hours of the stage, you know, even if people are working, they wouldn't be working, if you see what I mean. So perhaps that's food for thought anyway.
Indeed. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, the crowds perhaps are bigger. I mean, certainly on a climb like today, you saw a lot of people had ridden their bikes up. You know, it was really beautiful looking place. Not entirely sure how remote it was, but stunning to look at. And the road surface looked like it had been laid last week. I mean, absolutely glorious. So I could imagine if you were a cyclist in that area, you would definitely try and wangle the afternoon off and take your bike up there. It looked great.
A final comment before we go. Another rider we probably should have mentioned yesterday, Hugh Carthy. I suggested that, you know, he had a tough time in the team time trial. He was last man consistently on stage one, which, you know, you shouldn't read too much into that. But he lost a lot of time yesterday, and again lost a bit of time today. And he is, you know, well down overall. Now, he could just be saving it all for, you know, for later on in the race, stages that will suit him better. But I don't know. Maybe there's something up with him. I'll find out when I head out there on Thursday.
Yeah, it's 33:19. It is his overall deficit. So yeah, he's not going to claw much of that back, is he?
He's not going to win the race, is he, Lionel?
Certainly not. I think we can probably say that fairly, you know, fairly certainly that's not going to happen. But my suspicion was that, you know, first Grand Tour, you know, it would be much more beneficial for a rider of his age and experience to be up at the pointy end as much as possible, deeper into the race, and see what he can do. And perhaps the idea is to just take it easy. But, you know, we're speculating here. Rich, it's your first...
We shall see.
Yeah. Your first assignment when you get to Spain on Thursday night is to find out.
Well, I've got a list as long as my arm. It's kind of odd not being there and not being able to go and, you know, find these things out. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and spending a week and then handing the baton over to you, Lionel. Shall we wrap things up for today and come back tomorrow?
Indeed, yes. Let's do that.
Let's do that. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.